off mic, we were talking about Phoebe and George assembling a pram, and it got me thinking about contraptions, and it reminded me of something that happened to me the other day that I felt that I had to just voice on the pod really quickly. Annabelle and I were in Costco, and unfortunately Annabelle wandered off somewhere, so she didn't get to witness this, but there were these two women looking at the really, like, the pallets of stuff on, like, the high shelves in Costco, like the ones that are like 10, 15 feet off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, how do they get that stuff up there? And then these were both women, like, in their, like, late 20s, early 30s, I would say. And then the other one went, well, they have, like, ladders and stuff. And she went, no, but it's, look at that pallet. It's, like, it's so heavy. Like, there's so, you couldn't just carry
you're
that
not
up
carrying
a ladder.
That up a ladder.
And then she's like, well, I guess they must have a machine. And the other one goes, yeah, probably a machine, maybe like a cherry picker or something. And I'm like, how are both of these adult women unfamiliar with a forklift truck? Like, like tabula rasa, like never seen a forklift truck ever. Like, this is like their first time from first principles attempting to derive the concept of a forklift truck.
I think it's beautiful seeing somebody just kind of consider something for the first time in a whole life.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
Learning moment. You know?
Yeah.
Well, they didn't really learn anything.
No.
But they thought about it.
I'm quite envious. I'm envious of that kind of of that kind of wonder in approaching the world.
Yeah. They started their journey towards learning something, but in so doing, they started their journey towards there being less wonderment.
Mm.
Oh, that's true.
And one day, they're going to be, you know, 35 in Costco, looking at some young people. I remember when I didn't know about forklifts. We'll come full circle, you know. No, leave them alone. They'll figure it out. They'll get there.
Then you retreat to your meditative pose under the tree. You just stay there. Yeah.
Milo just climbs back into the room at the top of the pre-assembled tree house that they have, the big cubby that they've got in Costco all the time.
Imagine arriving by forklift and everyone's thinking you're magic.
I've seen some impressive forklift driving in my days. Well, particularly like pallet jacks, you know, because there's that distinction between a proper forklift, motorized, you're driving it with a wheel and everything, versus like the little sort of flat guys with the things in front that you can just slot in. People scoot around in warehouses with them, you know?
Yeah. That is
true. High up. Started following some of those Instagram accounts that have the extremely unsafe behavior on them of people on work sites, you know, like using one forklift to lift up another forklift to get something to a sort of third level of height.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Costco,
to be honest.
I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I'd like
as long as I'm not on either of the forklifts or near them.
Yeah.
I get to watch it.
It's like cool. Ordering from the forklift secret menu. Like, they tell you that a forklift can't go that high, but it can if you have two forklifts.
Yeah, exactly. Did you know you can you snap them together like Lego?
Yeah.
Or Legos, if we're following the Lego style guide.
Yeah. Oh, is that actually in
the style guide?
Because it's only Americans who say that.
Yeah, I thought this
I believe that, like, that it's, you know, each of them are like a Lego brick, you know? And then they have like a sort of a plural state. And the people at Lego are getting upset that we're all out here saying it wrong.
Yeah. And then you've got a dead set Lego, which is something else.
What's that?
Lego style guide. Lego brand, okay. Brand identity and experience.
Is there a style guide? Is it like set up like the Harvard referencing
system? The BBC.
Oh, there's absolutely a Lego brand identity manual. Just in case Lego's brand values. That's good to know.
What are their brand values? As soon as a plastic brick goes beyond a few centimeters, it's valueless.
Imagination, creativity, fun, learning, caring, and quality. Those are their brand values. They're all pretty good, I think.
Yeah, they're not so bad.
It's very, very Scandinavian of them.
Who invented Lego? Is it a Scandinavian thing?
It's Danish, I believe.
Yeah. Surely.
Yeah.
It's obviously European. I think we can all agree. Lego distinctly.
Yeah. It's funny to imagine what each individual country would come up with if tasked with building Lego. Like, I feel like German Lego would be functional, but it would be like hideously complex. Like, it would be beyond the abilities of most children.
Here we go. I've got it. Have you ever wondered about the proper way to refer to these colorful building blocks? Is it Legos or simply Lego? The Lego company, the mastermind behind these iconic toys, has a firm stance on this matter. They are brandishing a gun.
They are pointing
a firearm at you. Except it's one of those, like, Technics ones that absolutely works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, well, that's how they build Shinzo Abe.
Like, this is like Bin Laden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Bin Lego.
They knew what they were doing.
Assemble Bin Lego. Yeah.
So they adamantly maintain that the correct plural form is Lego bricks or Lego sets, treating Lego as an adjective rather than a noun. Imagine the Lego company is the proud parent of these plastic bricks, carefully nurturing their identity and proper usage. It's just got insane. Just as you wouldn't refer to a group of puppies as puppies with a Y,
I would.
The Lego company insists that its beloved bricks should be addressed with the respect they deserve. Lego branded bricks, not Legos.
But that is...
I would refer to puppies with Y because I think that puppies are very nice and deserve like, you know, pets and so on. But I don't think they deserve any respect.
I love how bad an analogy that is. Because the incorrect plural of puppies and the correct form of puppies are homophones for a start.
Yeah, true.
Also, so someone reading this to you, for example, me, is not immediately having to explain what they're reading off the page.
Also, I say puppy bricks.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And second of all, the grammatical construction of the plural isn't Legos, it's Lego bricks is not at all the same with what's going on with puppies and puppies. Like that's a completely different. So that is the Scandinavian mind in action, in my view.
And of course, the word Lego originally trademarked in Denmark in 1932.
That's right.
It's pretty early.
That's something to add to the list of Denmark's achievements, right?
Yeah, what else have we got? Lutefisk?
Pastries?
Yeah. Well, they just call them pastries.
Pastries and fairy stories.
Fairy stories, yeah.
I mean, honestly, I'm absolutely fucking with Lego and pastries.
Yeah, an unusual strand of Scandinavian fascism as well in Denmark. But, that's less good.
They've got a peculiar kind of re-education camp that they...
Yeah, well, that's what they call it, fascist bricks.
There. Well, actually, that's where they teach you how to build Lego there.
Yeah, but it's fascist Lego. You don't want to let it.
All the bricks are black. But we're not here to talk about Denmark. we're here to understand
the Danish mind.
Yeah, that's right. That many have tried, and many have it's descended into madness by staring at that particular rune. No, it is Movie Corner. The Movie Corner theme tune will now play.
Movie Corner. It's Movie Corner. We're reviewing movies. Oh, it's Movie Corner.
And we are joined by returning champion, friend of the shows. It is Andrew Law from Bunta Vista. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing very well. Very well.
Delighted.
I got to see Milo in the flesh recently, and it was lovely. Oh,
so nice, if I do say so myself. A delight.
It was.
Yeah, it was such a nice time. We had a very, very wholesome afternoon in Canberra. If you're listening to this, sorry, it was in the past. You've missed out on that particular gathering, but hey, better luck following me more closely next time. Yeah, you can imagine. Go
imagine
wild.
Yourself eating a pizza sandwich.
Yeah. At one point, Andrew presented me with a coffee table book of photographs taken in all across the Soviet Union, all in one day. And what a time. What a time it was.
What a
time. Having a real browse. So we are here to talk about something much less historically interesting than a coffee table book of photos taken in the late Soviet Union. It is, in fact, Angel Has Fallen, the third in the Has Fallen series of movies. A series of movies which has to be referred to by the stupidest title of all time because they've come up with the framing device of everyone has fallen in the title.
Mm-hmm.
But then out of context, the Has Fallen series of films makes it sound like you're having a stroke. Like it doesn't sound...
Yeah, it makes it sound insane.
It does, yeah.
And we were discussing this off mic, but I think we have to begin by just quickly recapping the series so far, because also on this podcast, we have discussed White House Down, which came out at the same time as Olympus Has Fallen, the first in the... Now, so White House Down features Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx. So please mark on your bingo cards now, Channing Tatum and Jamie Foxx, not part of the Has Fallen series. If at any point during this discussion you find yourself picturing Channing Tatum more or Jamie Foxx, that is the wrong IP.
Yeah.
You're thinking about a different movie. Yeah.
Crazy though to consider it. It was one of those like Robin Hood type things where they had just sort of two of the same movie come out in the same year because Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down, both from 2013.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very sus.
Yeah. Why does it keep happening?
Two coke-headed Hollywood guys were absolutely racking lines and saying, "Get this, it's Die Hard and it's in the White House." And then they both went off that night thinking, yeah. We promised to make that screenplay together, but I didn't get his number. We're Facebook friends now, but I feel like it would be too weird to message him out of nowhere and say, hey, remember all that coke we were doing the other night? Mm-hmm. I think I'm just going to work on it myself.
Yeah.
And off they went to make history, you know?
Exactly.
Off they went to, I can't believe that Olympus Has Fallen was the one that spawned the franchise.
Yeah.
I know.
Because White House Down is definitely more fun.
White House Down is more fun, and it also has more dance sequences because it's got Channing Tatum, so which is would be my preference.
Yeah, yeah, I do. Yeah, I mean Channing Tatum, he does bring an element of sauce to whatever he's doing.
Yes, he's making a few jokes. You know, he's a little self-deprecating at times. Jamie Foxx gets to do like an Obama impression. It's got James Woods being kind of insane.
Does, yeah,
there's the whole bit where Jamie Foxx is obsessed with not getting his Jordans dirty. In
your hands off even my though Nikes.
Even though he's the president.
I could probably quite easily get some new Jordans, to be honest with
you.
You would think so.
He's probably got access.
Like, I'm not enough of a sneakerhead to have recognized if they were like exceptionally rare Nikes or anything.
And you're quite a sneakerhead, so that's putting it at quite a high level, I would say. It felt as though, and this is now coming from my mind palace of when we watched this film, which was some time ago, that White House Down, they sort of had one black character, which was Jamie Foxx, and they felt the need to include every sort of black archetype in his characterization, because it's like, well, we got to squeeze all of these beats into the film, and it made quite a jarring combination of very different types of black men that are out there.
I mean, whether it was archetype or whether it was stereotype is sort of a little bit open to debate. I think that if you're the president of the United States, you could probably get your hands on even a limited edition pair of Jordans. They'd make you. They'd
you
make
would hope
you.
So, yeah.
If, like, you got them dirty.
You could get the deep state to go out and assassinate somebody who had posted a listing on, like, a sneakerhead website, you know? My extremely rare, never opened, like, 1989 Nike Airs.
Yeah.
Specifically, crazily enough, they're in the president's size.
Yeah.
They say in the listing, which is weird.
But like
the Secret Service turned up and they're like, we're taking these.
I've been waiting for this.
Yeah,
I knew it.
Now, if I remember correctly, Jamie Obama Fox in White House Down does, I think, say, "Oh hell no." I think there's a bit where he says, "Oh hell no."
Seems pretty likely, doesn't it?
I think he does. Now we have a little bit less sauce in the Has Fallen franchise, because we have Gerard Butler, who is just this kind of gloomy, kind of craggy individual. He looks like a haunted tree. He does
look like a haunted tree. He looks like something from the early Harry Potter books, you know.
I'm actually kind of surprised that there's only 6 years between the first and third movies in this series, because he looks fucking
he does
terrible.
He looks like someone's like,
oh, he's aged badly.
He looks like someone's like, yeah, like removed his face and then just like left it out in the rain and then not like ironed it again.
You know who else it kind of makes me think of similar, like as in actor, another like British actor, unless I'm applying British wrong here, Milo. We were just talking about that. Another British actor who became famous at around the same time, Clive Owen, I feel like he kind of was initially a very, very handsome man, and then very suddenly he looked like 20 years older than he did right before that.
Clive Owen is English, so you're very safe in referring to him as British.
Oh, I more meant the Scottish of.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, that's British. It's with Irish people where you get into it, because Northern Ireland is a grey area, because obviously if you're from Northern Ireland, you are technically British, but some people from Northern Ireland consider themselves more Irish than British, or that's a bit of a sticky one. Republic of Ireland is never British, but people still often get that wrong.
Scottish, though, you're in there.
Yeah, whether they like it or not.
but Gerard Butler not looking good in this one. And I don't know if you guys have seen a movie called Den of Thieves.
No.
From several years ago. It's kind of a...
It is ringing a bell in a way that I don't like.
It has like kind of bell. The feeling of a bit of a... it's like a kind of a heist movie that seems like it's mainly sort of riffing on Heat, you know. Except it's got Gerard Butler as the like lead detective in this movie, but he's like extremely divorced and hanging out at the strip club and drinking for breakfast and eating horrible food.
Breakfast is the dark timeline bowling for soup.
Yeah, he looks like that character should look, because he looks how he currently looks. Whereas in this movie, he is still meant to be like a pretty elite. He's meant to be like, you know, a very elite, combat ready, highly trained special forces, secret service motherfucker. But he also looks like he maybe has 5 or 6 pints a night, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoy American action films characterizations of like whoever the tough guy is. So he's a Green Beret Marine. He was in the Special Navy Air Force Service, and now he's in the Secret Service protecting the president. And it's like, is that really what guys in the Secret Service are like?
Don't know. I feel like
did they serve in every branch of the US military before joining the Secret Service?
It's sort of not clear, is it?
He was in the Korean War.
I feel like Clive Owen predated.
He's 86 years old.
Oh, but actually, maybe they are kind of contemporary.
I think it's a relatively similar timeline, because the earliest stuff I remember Clive Owen from, he had like a minor role in the first Bourne movie, The Bourne Identity, and that was late 90s, right? You got Moby on the soundtrack and shit.
I think it's is it 99 or 2000?
Gerard Butler's big thing was 300, right?
Yeah, which is like 2007.
Yeah, 2007. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I remember.
Surely not.
Yeah,
well, I nailed that.
I'm
Born Identity 2002.
No, there you go. You're very, very close. Yeah, I thought it was earlier.
I remember it coming out.
It does. It's the long 90s. The 90s ended in 2003.
Yeah, this is true.
I think you're right there, Phoebe. I reckon maybe there's like kind of a 5-year gap in there. And of course, I'm only coming at it from the perspective of like when both of these guys started to be like internationally known. Whereas I wouldn't know if either of them were kind of on TV shows.
I would think that he was, because Clive Owen's career started in the 90s, but he was in like kind of UK based stuff. I think his first famous role was probably Sin City, no?
Like his first sort of headline-y kind of one.
Oh,
that was kind of a small movie though.
He was in bloody Children of Men in 2006.
What, Sin City? Yeah. Sin City was a small film, wasn't it? It was fucking everywhere. It was huge. It was
absolutely everywhere. But
I remember it coming out, but I don't really remember anyone watching it.
Might have been a bit young, though. Everybody watched it.
And we were all saying, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
I hated Sin City so, so much. And it was literally everywhere for weeks. Mm. Like I said, Marley, you might have been a bit young when it came out.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I remember it.
No, but I mean,
out,
like, for everyone you know to have seen it. When was Closer? Was that earlier than Sin City? I think it might have been.
2006, a big year for Clive Owen, given that Inside Man and Children of Men in 2006.
But yeah, what happened to him?
Conflicts the two of them.
What happened to Clive Owen?
I think everybody said, you're going to be James Bond, and then he wasn't.
Clive Owen would have been a fun James Bond. Like, it would be kind of like the Daniel Craig era James Bond, but just like more sort of like ennui.
Yeah, a little sad. You know? Oh, well, I guess.
Yeah, we've had gritty Bond. Now we deserve ennui Bond.
He should be a little tidier. And let's face it, no offense to Daniel Craig, but let's have a handsome James Bond again. Just get a handsome guy in there.
Oh, interesting. We're in the Daniel Craig not Daniel handsome Craig is camp. Handsome.
You're being silly. Oh, look,
you know,
you're being silly.
Look.
That's
all right. How
that's
about this,
silly talk. Daniel? That's silly talk. That's Legos talk.
Can we agree on? Daniel Craig is not conventionally attractive. How about that?
He's not like a conventional pretty boy, but he is definitely conventionally attractive. The two things are different, I think. He's got another craggy face. He's another kind of haunted tree guy, but a sexy haunted tree.
Well, he certainly aged better than fucking Gerard Butler, that's for sure.
Yeah, So Gerard's not been doing so well. Mike Banning has not been doing so well.
Gerard Butler aging like a bag of cottage cheese.
No, and I was thinking about, because I had come on the show previously when we talked about London Has Fallen, and I think like
1,000 years ago,
the main disappointment to me of this movie, right? Because it, like, I think we can all agree before we even get into the movie, it does not have the juice of the first or second installments, right? The first one has the fun of Gerard Butler just like knife murdering, just so
stabbing
many
people
dudes
through the top of the head,
and just and then being like rude
as though
to
they
them,
have a fontanelle,
you know?
Yeah,
it's like it is like he's doing a Bond, but an extremely murderous one. You know, he's just kind of stabbing people straight through the softest part of the top of their skull, and then saying, "Ha, fuck you." Like, that's...
Yeah. It's kind of like Die Hard, if Die Hard had been stabbed through the top of the head. Like, it's that similar, like, he's crawling around the White House, he's stabbing people in the top of the head, he's making quips, but it's all in the brain of a dying man.
Second movie has the juice of letting you watch, like, all the world leaders get assassinated hilariously in one sitting, where we're tossing the Japanese Prime Minister off a bridge... We're annihilating the French Prime Minister and his obvious mistress, you know, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Compounded with, there was some layer to that movie that I kind of enjoyed, a weird irony of getting a Scottish guy to pretend to be an American guy being extremely racist to everyone outside of America.
Yeah.
But this one,
that was funny.
Unfortunately, the call is coming from inside the house.
Boring.
You know, there's there's no fun go back to fuckheadistan type lines.
No, none of that.
It's all just
go back to fuckheadistan. You are a Hafiz for bad movies. Because you say stuff and I'm like, fuck, that is
a
line
from the
movie.
Go back to Fuckville, Missouri, which isn't as
yeah. It's this movie is more like, hey, I thought
you
were
Missouri's
my friend.
Is a fine town.
This movie is just Gerard Butler going, I've got a headache and I'd like to sit down for most of the film.
Yeah. Much like many of his former enemies, Gerard Butler has a headache.
Yes.
There was also actually yesterday, Phoebe and I were hanging out, and I was bringing up my favorite thing about London Has Fallen, which is the bit towards the end where they bring in the SAS, and Gerard Butler has to, you know, despite the fact that he hates anyone who's not American and he hates ever receiving any assistance, he has to team up with the British SAS in an unlikely alliance to save the day. And then the guy kind of like trots out of the darkness and he's like, Captain whatever SAS. And then it's like, no, wrong type of guy. Captain whatever SAS has the tally-ho, lads, boys. You're thinking of Sergeant whatever SAS.
I'm sure in those scenes that there's like a Scottish guy in the SAS, and every time Butler is in the same scene as him, his accent is gone. His accent's off the fucking rails every time he's around another Scottish guy. Like from scene to scene, it's so
like
noticeable.
He just can't be bothered at this point. He's got a headache. He wants a cup of tea and a nice little sit down.
Yep.
I'm Mike Banning from the Secret Service. I'm protecting the president.
You fucking call me English.
Most American man you've ever seen. I guess like...
It's been some kind of insurrection.
Yeah, the whole theme of this movie, right, is like, wouldn't we all rather not be doing our job? seems to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because the end of London Has Fallen is him going, I'm going to quit.
Yeah.
Like, he's ready to pack it in. He's been fucked up. He's been, you know, in two Die Hard style situations. His wife is like, I am pregnant and you've almost been killed a bunch of times. I'd like to live with you and our child. And he's like, you know what? That's pretty reasonable.
And
I'm going to now resign from my extremely life-threatening role at work. And he types up his letter. And in the final shot of the movie, he sees the president saying, hey, we got to stand up to the bullies of the world. You know how America's always standing up to the bullies. And
a likely thing for America to be doing.
The underdog of the world, America.
Yeah, and he's like, the most important thing is us standing up and fighting. And he's like, you're right. And he backspaces his resignation letter.
He does, he does. It's so good. He does, like, instead of just like shutting the tap, he just goes like, delete. Double click on.
The only way to get rid of it. You don't want to open Google Docs later and find your half-written resignation letter, do you?
Oh no! It's Gmail. Yeah. I can recall it. I'm going to recall it.
You know how you write to the president with Gmail?
That's right.
But my point being, he's
the president at gmail.com.
He's fucking ready to pack it in at the end of the second movie, and he spends the entire third movie like, you know, having constant headaches. This man absolutely has CTE. He has had so many concussions from explosions and fist fights and being thrown off of buildings and everything. You know, the doctor he goes to see is like, you will die if you keep getting physically punished and you need to stop. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you're right. I fucking hate this. I hate this. And I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm going to pack it in. I'm going to resign to President Morgan Freeman.
MacGuffin. Yeah, to President Morgan Freeman. I love the little MacGuffin of the doctor as well, because he's seeing just like this normal doctor who's just like, so wait, remind me what it is that happened to your head? And he can't give him actual medical advice because he doesn't actually know what happened to him, which is why the Secret Service have doctors in order to avoid this precise situation, presumably.
But he has to lie because he's in the Secret Service and he says, I sell computers.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like,
really helping himself out there.
That's why the Secret Service have their own doctors, so you don't have to come up with some kind of peculiar lie. Yeah, he's like, I don't know. He feels like he's kind of lost heart for the whole thing in this one.
That's why I find.
I'm just saying, doesn't stab anyone through the head. Like oddly, even though like loads and loads of people die. But
he's
they die
seat.
In a very kind of, this film is rated 12A kind of way. Like, it's a lot less violent than the previous two. And it's a lot less kind of, because we were talking about this yesterday, because the first two are like, so like, aggressively defensive of a kind of, like sort of a fascist adjacent picture of American imperialism, that it's almost like a joke. It's almost like this must be like a parody. This is like a kind of propaganda film. But
feels like you are winking.
It feels
at
like
me,
you
so.
Are winking at me. But this one, he's just like going, oh god.
It feels like Agent Mike Banning has lost his lust for death. Yeah. You know.
What they needed to do was
used to get him up in the morning.
Like, what they needed to do is go back to the 60s in order to regain his mojo, because that's what he seems to have lost.
Yeah.
Now
I've got to get my mojo back, sir.
Before we started, we did say that, like as you watch this movie, there's kind of very little going on in it, right?
There's
very little going on. The plot is very much A to B to C. The twist, if you can even be bothered calling it that, is like extremely telegraphed. And yet, I still find myself going, you know, there's the barest of meat on these bones, but I still find myself very confused by Mike Banning's character throughout this movie. Because he's kind of spending the whole time going, like, it's like he's really fucked up by all of the traumas of his past, all the beatings he's taken, all the explosions and so on. He's been advised medically, you should not be continuing to do this. To the point where it's kind of clear that, like, it's maybe got the potential to compromise his ability to protect the president, because he's constantly kind of closing his eyes and grimacing with these, like, you know, concussion headaches and stuff that he's getting. So it's genuinely hard for me to kind of figure out if the motivation of the character is supposed to be that he wants to keep going, but he's dismayed by the fact that he may no longer be physically able to do the job properly, or if he really wants to stop, but he can't bring himself to say, I can't do this thing anymore. I'm not strong enough or whatever, you know? Like it's genuinely really unclear to me throughout watching the movie if it's like he wishes he could keep going, but he can't, or he really fucking wishes he could stop.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like they can't decide which one it is.
Because every scene that they have him with, like, the wife and baby, he doesn't seem to be, like, particularly torn. He's just saying, like, yeah, no, I want to retire and hang out with my wife. I want to quit. I want to hang out with my wife and baby.
Which he said a bunch of times in the second movie.
I don't want to die horribly because now I've got this child
that
I've got to look out for.
There's only one soft part of the top of the head I'm interested in.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's the soft part of the top of the head of my infant child.
Because, like, people don't understand that his fondness for stabbing people right through the top of the head was a violent expression of his brooding for fatherhood. He was just, you know, like, just meeting people, being like, God, these bones are too fused. Fuck it. Not at all like a baby.
Take you back.
I must create fontanelles wherever I go. Yeah, that's my...
Oh, they replaced his wife in this one. That's the other way in which they're phoning it in. They couldn't get Australian actress Radha Mitchell back. And she has generally been relegated to, like, sort of sci-fi, low-budget horror movies for a long time. So it makes me go, oh, you...
Radha Mitchell's such a great actress. They named her after the drama school. That was their tactic for getting her into the acting business.
So instead, we have a Piper Perabo. Latterly of Coyote Ugly. She's been in other stuff, but I have no idea
Piper
what.
Piper Perabo.
I don't know. I was looking. That is a tongue twister name. I was like, have you been in other stuff, Piper Perabo? And nothing was jumping out at me.
She was in Cheaper by the Dozen and Cheaper by the Dozen 2 and The Prestige.
Oh, yeah, she's the wife in The Prestige.
Oh, okay. All right. She's been in Yellowstone, which apparently is like, the biggest thing on American television in decades, puzzlingly enough.
Oh, fuck. The FBI agent is Jada Pinkett Smith. I did not notice that.
Oh, man. I have in my notes here, Jada Pinkett Smith has certainly done some things to her face.
Is that... That wasn't Jada Pinkett Smith, was it?
It sure was.
No.
I regret to inform you that it was.
She had the wig on.
When I was doing my, like, my standard, like, wait, is that who is that? I just got fixated on it being Nick Nolte. Not the FBI agent, the dad who, the Kaczynski dad, who we will no doubt come to.
Yeah,
Papa Kaczynski over there in the woods.
Yeah, we had what is his name? The guy who was the president in the previous ones.
Aaron Eckhart.
Fuck. Aaron, yes, thank you. Aaron Eckhart. I assume that he's served his two terms in the previous two movies, and now his vice president, Morgan Freeman, has taken over.
That's what's happened.
President Trumbull, and that also had me looking at IMDb.
Trumbull is a bad surname.
But the campaign slogan,
trumbling in their boots,
because you could just go with "Let's get ready to trumble."
That's true.
Yeah, that's right.
But it did have me looking at IMDb to try and figure out when was the last time Morgan Freeman was in something that I would consider like an actual movie.
Mm-hmm.
I pinned it at Invictus in 2009.
Wow.
But he's really in that kind of, I think he's really in that sort of, you know, Robert De Niro kind of phase of life where it's like, yeah, we'll pay you whatever to turn up for like 2 weeks and shoot a movie with 50 Cent kind of areas.
Oh, yeah. He's 86.
Sure is. He's been doing it. Been doing it for a long time. I don't begrudge anybody getting to the point where they're just like, yeah, I will do very undemanding jobs for, I assume, a reasonable paycheck in a short amount of time. But
it's strange when you get and I think this is a phenomenon that happens quite a lot, an actor like Morgan Freeman, who's genuinely a good actor and has been in lots of good movies, that then they just suddenly start being in lots of bad movies for no real reason. Like, they have no, like, financial need to be in these movies. And also, there's nothing stopping them from being in good movies. However...
You would think so, you know?
Yeah.
But like, yeah, if you look at like Robert De Niro's IMDb. Apart from when he gets put in like a Scorsese movie, when Scorsese's doing one.
Yeah.
So all right. Just in between the recent kind of Scorsese movies and Joker, we also have movies like Savage Salvation, The Comeback Trail, The War with Grandpa.
What's The War with Grandpa?
The War with Grandpa.
It was part of the wider Iran-Contra conflict.
There's a movie with, I believe, one of the kids from... It looks like one of the kids from Stranger Things. Upset that he has to share the room he loves with his grandfather, Peter decides to declare war in an attempt to get it back.
What, formally?
Well, 2020 awesome. Family film. He's just, like the amount of shit that you see...
Yeah, he summons Robert De Niro's ambassador.
Grudge Match, Las Vegas, another one of those. We got four real old guys together. The Big Wedding. Freelancers, like just a whole but killer elite, you know.
I've just learned something very funny about Robert De Niro for British listeners, which is that Robert De Niro's first wife was called Diane Abbott.
Yeah, his first wife was Diane Abbott. What's funny about that? She was married.
Yeah, he was married to. That was shortly after her affair with Jeremy Corbyn. She was married to Robert De Niro.
Young
for
Abbott
about
had
15 sort of, years.
Everyone knows that.
No one would deny that.
Have neither?
Just, I don't think many people knew that she was.
Have neither of you ever seen
Killer
Elite? It's fucking fantastic.
Well, I'm getting it. I'll get that.
Oh, no, I've never even heard of it.
Well, I just saw that it's got Statham in it. It's got a lot of
Statham. It does, and it has De Niro taking second billing to Statham. That's how fucking good Killer Elite is.
That's how. Yeah, that's how you know it's the paycheck movie.
To Diane Abbott,
you know?
Right.
There's
Savage Salvation, starring Jack Houston, Robert De Niro, and John Malkovich.
Would you consider Dark Knight Rises to be a real film or not really?
Yeah, in the sense that it's a very
it's close enough
to a film.
A bit like big budget film, you know, with a well-regarded director. Sure.
Yeah.
The Bagman.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's fucking movies.
Yeah. Well, actually, on that note, I have to say about Angel Has Fallen. So, Gerard Butler is obviously making all of these with his own production company,
yes.
G-Base Productions. No prizes for guessing what the G stands for.
And I will give him points for saying, if you are going to turn out a bunch of sequels to a fucking ordinary action movie or whatever, if you can hook it up so you make a ton of bank off it, go ahead.
He is a smart man because this film had a budget of $40 million and a box office receipt of $146.7
fucking
million.
Fucking hell.
That's probably why, because when we said let's talk about Angel Has Fallen, I thought to myself, yes, the final entry in the Has Fallen series, but I was wrong. I spoke too soon.
Oh.
They have announced and are you continuing did. To produce Night Has Fallen, the fourth film in which Butler will reprise his role as Mike Banning.
I think it started shooting. Based on, I'm reading between the lines here, because they said they would start shooting it after the end of the actor and writer's strikes, which ended last year. So,
because that's funny, because it sounds precisely the sort of thing that they start making during a writer and actor strike, where they've just got like the executives being like, we've got to make a fucking film. Can't be that hard. Writers do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We need to get a bunch of European actors who aren't in SAG-AFTRA. Like, yeah, we're gonna get like Liam Neeson. Jean Reno, fuck the other Vincent Cassel.
You know what? That is so. That is
Daniel
so
Brühl.
Weird. I was literally going to say Vincent Cassel. Why? Why
the man who is in every
of all
French
the
movie?
Scab actors does Vincent Cassel the one that leaps into mind? That's really strange.
Yeah,
I was opening my mouth to say it.
But Night Has Fallen will be the first of three more movies. Like, we need six of these guys.
Three more.
So, following the release of Night Has Fallen, at least two more movies will follow. In addition to the movies, Millennium Media has plans to expand the film series into a franchise with the addition of television spin-offs being considered.
My favorite thing is that Night Has Fallen was tied up in a lawsuit. between Butler and Millennium Media, but that has now been settled.
This is a G-based production through and through.
Yeah.
I will never give up on my beloved character, Secret Service agent Mike Banning.
You don't want to be G-basing your Has Fallen movies. They're much more addictive.
It's probably
that
why he looks so much older, because he's been G-basing.
Yeah. You just want to snort the Has Fallen movies as God intended.
So the plot of this movie, as far as you could call it that, is basically that Trumbull is president. He wants to put money into the good old US of A military-industrial complex, which, as we know, people are notoriously against funding the US military. Mm-hmm. But he's brave enough to do it. Whereas, you know, the dastardly military contractors are trying to take that money private. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, we don't want to do that. We want precious, sweet, perfect, innocent American soldiers to get that money. And that's basically the whole... I like when they're describing the tensions at the start of the movie and somebody in the press pack says, Mr. President, how do you plan to stop Russia from reforming the Soviet Union?
Yeah. and even the president looks a little baffled. Like, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think they're planning on doing that. There's just looking at my notes here. I don't think it says that here.
It's so cool.
It's also pretty funny because since this movie came out, Russia had a go at reforming one bit of the Soviet Union, and it's gone so badly.
Really gone great. But that's one of the things that I do enjoy about all the terrible action movies and stuff that I watch is just charting who is appropriate to be the enemy of America at the time. Yep. What, 2016 for London Has Fallen, and that was the go back to Fuckheadistan one. But we've tapered off that now, and Russia's back. We're back to the 80s.
Back, baby.
It's okay to hate Russians.
Because we were trying to remember who the villain was in London Has Fallen, and neither of us could remember who it was.
Well, so the true
Villain was the city of London.
The true
itself.
Irony of London Has Fallen is that they do, at the start of the movie, Morgan Freeman, as Vice President Trumbull, issues an order to do a drone strike. I believe it hits a wedding and kills a bunch of innocent civilians, including some family members of this terrorist leader. And he says, "Ooh, you're going to get it," and orchestrates this big attack by saying, "You think that you can just strike us from afar and nothing will happen to you? Well, we're doing that back to you." The movie ends...
An unusual bit of realism from the Has Fallen series.
But the movie ends with nobody learning anything at all as President Trumbull then annihilates that man with a drone strike while saying, "Ha-ha, gotcha, bitch."
Yeah.
He says, go
from
outside
afar,
and look
just
up,
the way we like
he says.
It.
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? Fucking hell.
Yeah, like there is just... It's remarkable the extent to which they introduce a concept and then absolutely refuse to reflect on it in any way, shape, or form. Whereas in this movie, we get Danny Houston as the friend of Mike Banning, who they used to be in the military together. Now he runs a private defense contractor.
Yeah.
He's showing him his...
Yeah, and he looks like kind of like off-brand Serbian Jay Leno. Like if you hired a Jay Leno impersonator in Belgrade to come to your children's birthday party.
I was trying to see if he's ever like, played like
I love vintage
if he's
cars.
Ever played a good guy in anything. He's Angelica Houston's half brother.
He is, yeah.
Famous director John Huston. And he does just kind of, at least in his middle age, he has a pretty fundamentally evil face.
He does. It's unfortunate. He's got a little bit of an Epstein look to him.
That's not to say there's any connection between Danny Houston and any of the Epstein allegations.
If they did an Epstein movie, they could look, they could do worse casting wise. That's all I'm saying.
He's actually been in quite a lot of good movies, but is a remarkably unmemorable
man. Danny Houston, I completely disagree. He's got such a recognizable face.
He does.
Maybe, but I've just never thought about him. But he was in. He was in The Aviator. He was in The Constant Gardener.
Oh, he was the head vampire in 30 Days of Night. Men.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Yeah. I mean, The Kingdom, that wasn't a good movie.
The head vampire as well.
Another Jamie Foxx vehicle.
Jason Bateman as well.
Yeah, it's where they... Yeah, it's where the American Special Forces guys have to, like, go do a mission in Saudi Arabia with, like, one Saudi Arabian guide, and he's like, you cannot touch the body of a dead Muslim.
Oh, I think it's set in Iraq, there's a bombing inside the supposedly safe green zone, and they're like, we must solve this crime through forensics.
What am I thinking of that has, for whatever reason, Orlando Forensic Bloom racism. As a crusader? What am I thinking of? Kingdom of Heaven. Kingdom of Heaven. Thank you. A different film with a different vibe.
A different but equally valid movie.
What I think is great about Danny Houston in this film is that once upon a time, and in fact, I believe within this series, there's a little bit of a twist. You don't see who, particularly in the first one, where it turns out to be James Woods because his son was killed in the military.
Oh no, that's White House Down.
Is that it?
We need you're mistaking it for White House Down button.
Damn, we really, really do. Fuck. Because there's
hitting the big buzzer that says White House Down.
There is a bit in White House Down where he's talking about like the Forever Wars, which killed his son. And they think that they're going to be able to send his wife in to talk him out of it. And she sort of says, no, I completely agree. I completely support I completely support everything you're doing. Kill them all. And they're like, oh, we should have sent in a better hostage negotiator. So what's going on in
Olympus Has Fallen?
Yeah.
They have a Korean delegation that comes, but they're actually North Koreans masquerading as South Koreans.
But yeah, for fine. Classic.
It's fucking Dylan McDermott who's double crossing him.
Dylan McDermott. It is.
Yes. Instead of James Woods. And so similar thing there where him and Mike Banning used to be in the Secret Service together. Mike Banning has been taken off the detail after the president's wife dies.
Yeah, Dylan McDermott.
And it turns out he's gone traitor.
Yeah, a man who once smirked during a windstorm and now he just looks like that.
And this movie, I feel, Angel Has Fallen. Incredibly telegraphed when we're setting up the start of the movie by saying, okay, Mike Banning's friend here is a private defense contractor who is saying to him, hey, if you want to come out and if you would like to sign up to like spend some money training your special troops and stuff out here at my big fucked up compound full of all my very aggressive troops, that would be cool. And he's like, let me think about it.
Yeah, like,
after that.
Yeah, because there's a British guy there who he's like, you fucking kick me down the stairs, you fucking cunt. And he's like, you gotta plead for it, like
it's so much.
Otherwise,
like that.
You win it. Yeah. You're not going to fucking British bastard.
That's how we do it in America.
You fucking glassed me. You gotta be fucked. What if you're in a pub in Glasgow?
That's how we do it. North of the wall in Missouri.
North of the wall. Yeah, in like Newcastle.
So that's all going on. And if you have a kind of ex-Secret Service guy who's now a private defense contractor who's like, we're lions. Like, maybe keep a little bit of an eye on him because that's a bit of a fucked up thing to say. Because
Still killing people, Mike. Remember when we were in Iraq just fucking air-holing people?
And Mike's like, yeah, I do, but I've got a bit of a headache, so a little nap.
Kind of want to lie down.
Remember that classic move we used to do, stabbing a guy through the soft part of the top of his head like he was a crab you were trying to kill to make some kind of beast? And he's like, I remember that.
Well, this is they've got the sort of drop in budget for this one, which is why it's set on Upper Street. He finds himself stuck
that's right. I've got a migraine doctor.
not to put too fine a point on it, but it feels quite a lot like someone is sticking a knife through the soft part of the top of my
Islington
skull.
Otolenghi, I'm looking at the different types of rice.
I'm like, fuck this, I'm going to go to Frederick's.
It's just stuck patrolling around Essex Road Station being like, what? What? I don't understand this fucking junction.
I'm going for a fucking chicken sours, and then I'm going to the Big Sports Direct on Chapel Market. I'm going to get myself a big mug.
What do you mean they've stopped doing the mugs?
You can still get the mugs as like a kind of free corporate gift, but you can't buy a mug. Anyway, good. Glad we got that little bit.
Truly,
yeah. It's they don't even bother with a twist. It's you find out that he's the bad guy like 40 minutes in. It's telegraphed from the second this fucker shows up, and then when you're like, oh yeah, no, but that's not the twist. The twist is who's running him, and you're looking at it, and you're like, okay, fine. The twist is who's running him. It's the vice president, isn't it? Because he doesn't want to go back to being the vice president. He's the only one who has all the information. He's the only one who could possibly have orchestrated it. And he's also the only one who's left alive, apart from like Lance Reddick, and it's not him. So you're like,
even before the president is comatose, the vice president is like, interesting. Sir, have you considered spending more money on private contractors?
Yeah. The vice president's there, saying, okay, if anything happens to you, I'm gonna be the default president because of this weird bureaucratic rule. And I'm right in understanding it, that there is no mechanism for me to give that back to you, right? That's never happened. So, yeah. So he's the most suspicious fucking character going. We've got the head of the FBI, who, despite the fact that when Mike is being arrested for not just this carefully planned assassination of the president, but that has this like signposted paper trail at every single point. So he's managed to like orchestrate this incredibly complicated plan where he kills his entire detail and also tries to kill the president. But he's also sufficiently dumb that he's been like leaving notes about it like all around the place. And then you get like the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, who's like, I decline to investigate this, despite the fact that it has every single possible hallmark of a setup.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. That was a bit of the movie I really enjoyed, bro. It's like, oh yeah, this guy who has risked his life to stab hundreds of people in the top of the head many, many times, specifically to save this one man who he is now accused of trying to assassinate. Seems open and shut
to me. This literally saved the president in two high profile international incidents.
Although having said that, like right at the end, when the president's like, yeah, I know whose side he's on. He's on my side. Cause like he risked his life. He's the only reason I'm alive. But like, that's how you'd really be able to assassinate the president, by gaining his trust, by saving him. Right. Like there's a bit of a kind of forgive a serial cheater vibe off Morgan Freeman at the end there.
So what confuses me about the plot of this movie, right, is like we've said, extremely streamlined, right? We say, hey, private contractor stuff, blah, blah, blah. Then Mike Banning is out fishing with President Trumbull, and that is an established piece of canon from previous movies, that man loves fishing. Mm-hmm. Don't get between him and a fish, they say in the, I believe, the first and second movies.
For I've had my morning
this
fish.
This motherfucker loves fishing.
Yeah.
And so they're out fishing. Yeah. Some nefarious folks unleash what appears to be thousands of drones, which are stylized like metal paper planes that then... You know, they kind of suicide bomb the entire Secret Service detail.
Well, this is the weird part, because this is only in the director's cut, which is 6 minutes longer. But you get to see they do a little drone show first, and they appear in the shape of Captain Tom.
Okay.
One year before Captain Tom came to prominence, which is quite impressive.
And so everybody gets killed except for Mike Banning, the president. Is not killed, but he's in a coma, and they plant a whole bunch of shit, right? They put Mike Banning's hair in the van that the that the drones and stuff were in. They set up an account with...
Yeah, they leave his scrunchie. They set up
an account with $10 million in it, an offshore account. Mm-hmm. They make up a bunch of like fake communications. They put his fingerprints everywhere. They've gone to extremely elaborate efforts to frame this man, right? Mm-hmm. And then...
Listen, I don't know how my favorite Polly Pocket made its way into that.
And then after he gets caught, they break him out of police custody and murder all the cops so that they can be like, see, now it's going to look like he is the head of some kind of cell or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Mike Banning eludes them. He goes on a long and boring car chase through the woods. He manages to get away.
Oh, yeah, where he's driving a truck with no trailer.
Best vehicle for evading capture during a high-speed chase with helicopters and everything. 18-wheeler.
Yep. Not just an 18-wheeler. Absolutely. An 18-wheeler that's covered in fucking LEDs for some fucking reason.
Yeah, he stole the Coca-Cola lorry.
Like a party bus that he's like driving, through the woods.
Holidays are coming.
Which he steals off some... kind of non-specific kind of mountain militiamen.
It's like he's stolen one of those Japanese Dikatora trucks. Have you ever seen those? Japanese Dikatora trucks where they're like covered in huge pictures and gigantic lights. They look like an untransformed Transformer.
Yeah.
If the Transformer was from the 1970s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, an anime truck.
Disco. Yeah. So he steals one of those.
Oh yeah, they really do.
He steals one of those and he's blasting down the road. Evades capture, infiltrates the hospital where the president's being holed up, and he says, "Sir, it's you. It's always been you. I love you, sir." And the president says, Come here, big guy.
Weird.
Yep.
Well, that's
comes out of his coma just in time.
I have to respect your willingness to stab men from the top of the head.
That's not a good Freeman. Give that man his knife back.
He's not very hard to do.
Give that man his service issue knife.
Give that man his ceremonial knife. So we don't even give the Secret Service knives, but we must make an exception for this man. The knife is of great cultural significance.
Everybody in the room, pass your knives to the front. Give them all to Mike. And so at this point, right, like, okay, you know, the jig is up for these guys who have orchestrated this elaborate plot and everything. And they, rather than sort of say, we fucked it, the president knows, Mike knows, he's gonna tell on us, you know, he's gonna narc to the president. I think we should probably get out of the country on account of the whole trying to assassinate the president thing. Instead, they say... Ooh, the president's going to die today. Everybody, get in the cars. We're going down the hospital and we're going to kill the president in broad daylight with all of our faces uncovered. I think I kind of missed.
I sort of missed
how that gets them, like the private defense contracts that they were after. I missed how this stage of the movie advances their goals other than maybe sour grapes. Is it mainly sour grapes?
I think it's sour grapes.
Are they like, we committed to killing the president?
Is it that it keeps the vice president as the president? And so then... Because in America, they do have that insane quirk of their legal system where like you can basically commit any crime to make your guy president. Because if your guy is president, he can just pardon you. So you could just murder every other candidate and then your guy becomes president. Then he can be like, yeah, all those murders, fine.
This sounds very 14th century Venice to me. this suggestion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess my understanding of the plot up to this point was we are secretly conspiring with the vice president to murder the main president so that our guy can take over, at which point he will start funneling a bunch of money our way in the form of contracts. Mm-hmm. We'll all be rich.
Mm.
The vice president gets to become president. We get to become leading provider of murder to the United States and be very wealthy, right?
Top murder suppliers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so once...
Yeah.
I need physiotherapy after that geezer kicked me down the stairs. And the only way I can fund that is if they give me the murder contracts.
I will say I really appreciated in this film when when the bad guys do bust Mike out of police custody, and they do it by murdering all the cops around him and everything, they black bag him, they put him in a van, and he manages to get his way out and kill all the guys who are in the van. Like, he crashes the van and they're all dead except for him. And he pulls a balaclava off this guy to reveal that it is the British guy from the start of the movie.
Yeah.
The movie absolutely does not trust you to remember the events of 35 minutes ago. And they immediately play the footage of the guy saying, "You kicked me down the fucking stairs, cunt."
Yep. That's true.
Because it's like, it's not enough to just show you that you character's face. Guy. They're like, "We do not trust you to recognize this man. Run it back.
Well, they know how unmemorable the events of this movie are.
He's got a cute little moustache. He's got the moustache of a guy who hangs around pubs in Dublin pretending he's friends with Paul Mescal. That's the moustache he's got.
I really like it when a movie says to me, "I do not trust that you can remember something from 20 to 30 minutes ago."
But they've trusted us to remember films from like over a decade ago. So it's very confusing how much trust or lack thereof they have in the audience.
I'm watching this and going, "Wait, you're telling me this president likes fishing?
Wait, hang on.
I haven't had a flashback to him saying he likes fishing.
Fucking hang on a second.
They say being the president is a lot like fishing. I enjoy both.
I know I'm fixating on the twist, but the twist is so obvious. Not just that Danny Houston's a bad guy, because it obviously is, look at his face, but that it's the vice president who's running him, because again, only one left alive. But if they'd really wanted to sort of do a kind of, what's the twist, then make it be the baby who's running the whole thing.
The baby would be so vulnerable to being stabbed through the top of the head,
absolutely,
as previously discussed.
But also, if they surround themselves with enough of an administrative structure that means that that Mike Banning's never going to suspect his own baby, because she's just hanging out. She's in her high chair.
You get a boss baby type situation.
And also, when it comes to it, what's he gonna do? That's the baby. I think that would have been a better twist.
Alec Baldwin shot the president as the boss baby. Why was there even a loaded gun on the set of the boss baby?
I saw the other day, I saw a little excerpt from an interview with Alec Baldwin, and it was from like 2 days ago, where he was reflecting on his 40 years of sobriety and how, you know, he kind of misses parts of it, but you know, obviously it's been better for his life. And somebody was just pointing at that and saying, "He's been sober this whole time?" This whole time,
a fully sober
Baldwin. Well, in perusing Gerard Butler's Wikipedia, I do note that he apparently had some drinking problems earlier on in his life. Okay. Including getting fired from the law firm that he worked at. He was a lawyer before he went into acting.
I was the biggest lawyer they'd ever seen.
Getting your lawyer being Gerard Butler is so funny. Just like walking out of court, just like, "I'm going to jail, dude. My lawyer is stabbing the prosecution through the top of the head.
I can see the whiskey leaking out of his pores."
God.
But yeah, so apparently he had some drinking issues and that sort of stuff. Went to rehab, 2012, for painkiller related stuff. And drank a lot when he was younger. But I hate to cast doubt on a man, but I do kind of look at him over the last several years and think, how's that all going for you? You know, and hey,
yeah,
for like bad. You know, my full sympathy to anybody who is struggling with any of these issues, but I'll simply say that his physical shape in some of the movies of recent years does not give me a huge amount of confidence in that regard, I think.
Yeah, he's not looking great.
He's not.
Which, like I said, if you're in the right role, if you are in a role as like an extremely alcoholic, drug abusing piece of shit, dirty cop, works great. Den of Thieves. Check it out.
Perfect.
He's like chugging Pepto-Bismol in the morning and going around and harassing his ex-wife and a new boyfriend, you know?
Yeah. They should cast Gerard Butler in the Gordon Brown biopic.
Yeah.
Well, I think that there have been a number of issues. Which
is that just because you had a Gordon Brown ready to go and you just wanted to?
No, quite the opposite. I wasn't sure if I had the Gordon Brown ready to go. With Gordon Brown, what you've really got to get is the weird breath that he does. Where he does a kind of like basking shark face.
He does
face.
Do a basking shark face. That's exactly what he does.
Yeah. I mean, I like Gordon Brown, and I think he's a nice enough. Seems fine. I mean, by the standards of ex British prime ministers, he's got to be one of the least offensive.
But you are currently trying to set new records,
with
though.
Peculiar diction. Yeah,
like
that
speed
is very
running
true.
Offensive prime ministers at the moment.
Yeah. Although then there's sort of like I feel like there's also a lack of correlation between like offensiveness and objectively how bad a prime minister they were. Like, for example, like Liz Truss, I find quite inoffensive, despite how obviously terrible a prime minister she was, because it's just like she's like a perfect idiot. Like just everything she says, it's like it's kind of like she has like a Trump energy where you're just like, it's just such a joy to listen to her say anything.
Yeah, I think that
you can't really be mad.
They're definitely there is a certain point of like incompetence. Isn't there, where you just sort of assume that they can't actually get it together enough to do anything truly evil?
Mm. Yeah. And that was kind of the case with Liz Truss, to be fair. And it was pretty much the case with Trump, too. He was sort of, he was really hamstrung by just like being Trump.
I mean, that's not true. Under Trump, there's no Roe v. Wade. Like, I think that's
oh, yeah,
pretty,
like
he's definitely
he
done
did
some,
actually do a bunch
he's
of
definitely done
stuff.
Some fucking awful stuff.
Yeah. But that was also, I feel like a lot of the stuff that happened under Trump was stuff that had been rumbling along for a long time anyway. It was kind of like, though, he didn't stop anything bad from happening, but it didn't seem like he was particularly
no,
the
he
catalyst
also,
either. It was called the direction of travel.
He appointed the Supreme Court judges that made it possible, no?
I think he is the catalyst in the sense that you had like, you know, your Mitch McConnell running all of the, these are all the guys I want appointed to courts and all that kind of thing. And then Trump with the unique steamrolling bullying power to just get everybody in the party to say yes to everything that he was saying. Because if anybody went, that's a bad idea, it'd be like, oh, look at this fat gay guy. Everybody immediately had to.
It's hard to argue with. It's hard to argue with.
Oh.
Yeah. Look at him. Looks like a pussy to
One
me.
One of my favorites was that recent clip of him talking about Chris Christie. Where he just points into the crowd and goes, "So do not call him a fat pig," and just starts banging on at length about all these awful insults for Chris Christie. And he's like, "But I would never say that.
I would never say that." Yeah, no, I think there's definitely an argument that Trump doesn't care about Roe v. Wade like one way or the other. Like I think there's definite evidence that he is not like. When he sort of says like, "Oh yeah, abortion is evil," I think he's lying. I think he's just appealing to his base. But it did happen under him,
and I think
that is quite a concrete, like monstrous thing to point to. Whereas Truss doesn't really have anything other than the fact that she is sort of brought the day collar to public attention.
Yeah. What. Walked out, killed the queen, nuked the economy, left.
Our greatest comrade.
Yeah.
Liz Truss.
Yeah.
That's Marxist praxis. That Marxist praxis. That's fucking Leninist praxis. Coming in off Liz Truss. Exposes the flaws in a financialized economy and does in the hereditary ruler. She's a fucking one woman October revolution.
Opening up pork markets.
I don't mean October Revolution. You know what I mean.
One of the revolutions.
One of the revolutions.
The Matrix revolutions.
I mean, I don't know. Like the big takeaway from this movie, I feel, is like number one: if you want it to be clear what the fuck is going on, don't dress all of your characters identically the same. You've got to have some kind of distinction.
Well, my wife didn't watch this with me, but. I will say that if she had have been watching it, I think she would have been having a really severe case of like
the face blindness that she gets
for male actors.
Yeah, no. Well, I got it really badly. I could identify Lance Reddick, but the rest of him, I was like,
Yeah. I would say maybe 90%-ish of the other characters in this movie are like white men with brown hair and beards wearing like some variety of black combat clothing.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much everybody in the film. And they're all being filmed in the dark.
Yeah. Which is not that helpful. And like from quite a sort of a distance as well, because of the sort of the 12A approach to the violence. And also, I mean, and I'm sorry to have to say this, but this film has also left me with just like not a lot of faith in the CIA vetting procedure.
Mm.
And that's a real shame.
Mm.
Well, so like I was saying, the second movie ends with him going, "I'm ready to pack it in." And then he's like, "You know what? I'll keep doing it a bit more. Just a little more." And in this one, he's getting fucked up for the whole thing. He's already having all of these defined medical issues, and he is like, "I need to resign because this is all going very badly for me." And he gets through it despite, you know, all of the explosions going off around him and getting thrown downstairs and getting the shit beaten out of him.
Yeah, getting a taste of his own medicine.
He takes like 12 bullets just to the middle of his bulletproof vest in the whole section at the hospital towards the end, which is helpful that none of them hit him in any of the uncovered parts of his body. He's getting thoroughly beaten around.
That's got to really hurt, though. 12 bullets into a bulletproof vest. You're going to have a lot of cracked ribs after that.
So he's very much the worst for wear, especially by the time at the end of the movie that he stabs his so-called friend Danny Houston to death.
Mm-hmm.
Gets in one more knife murder for old time's sake.
He does get in one more knife murder. There's a bit when they kind of like both throw away their like assault rifles and you're like, okay, yeah, you're going to do this hand to hand like men. And then there's a bit, and I hated this bit so much, when he's just stabbed Danny Houston under the armpit. You're not going to survive that. And Houston's like, "I'm glad it was you." Mm. What? No, you're not. You're absolutely, that's a fucking lie. Because when it comes to it, I hope it's my old friend who's the one who brings me down. Then why bother setting him up for the assassination of the president, mate? If you're glad it's him, that's a stupid thing to say and I don't believe it. Mm.
Maybe you just got to say it to sound cool, you know?
I would say,
I actually wanted this to happen.
I'm really mad it was you. I'm big mad it was you. Fuck you.
This is hot for me, actually.
We could have both been rich. You fucking idiot.
Yeah. All I really wanted was for Gerard Butler to stab me under the armpit.
What more can anyone ask for, you know?
And that, and I orchestrated this whole thing in order to lead to that specific. It was a kind of butterfly effect type. I reworked it all in back.
And so after.
Yeah. I worked it all backwards.
After all this, he's like, "I've been brutally punished." There is also what has gone completely unmentioned up to this point due to not really being very interesting, which is that he goes off grid to escape.
No, I mentioned it. I mentioned Kaczynski Dad.
Mm. Oh, just in the sense that it figures into the plot.
Oh, right, yeah. It sort of doesn't. It's another MacGuffin, and it was a MacGuffin which I completely misunderstood because I thought that he just so happened to run into his off-the-grid kind of bearded dad with his weird little rotting shack in the woods. But no, he actively went and sought him out, which shows that he probably wasn't that good at being off the grid.
And
yeah. And it sounds like he's been collecting, like, his military pension and putting his real address on the form. So it's like, well, if the one person you're worried about knowing where you are is the government, why is the one person who knows your address
the government? Send the check that to seems one like, shanty lane.
He's like, "I won't even tell my own son but I will tell the government." Who are the one that the entire reason I'm doing this is so that the government doesn't know where I am.
How's he cashing his checks from his rotting shack in the forest?
Going into town, going to a liquor store. He finds his dad and he's like, "You abandoned me and my mother. You left us alone because all of that combat and shit that you saw drove you crazy." And he's like, interesting. It seems to have really fucked you up as well. And then
it's the soft part of the top of my head reminded you of the things you did.
So the end of the movie, we get to the point where he's like, okay, you know, I've got my dad telling me that like losing your life to this stuff ruins all your relationships. It'll ruin your relationship with your own Piper Parabo and your own soft-headed baby. You know, you should be there. You should be
your
there.
Your own damnably soft-headed baby.
Yep.
Piper Parabo sounds like it would be like the motto of the Navy SEALs or something. Like, you can picture it under a crest, can't you?
It can't be. Like,
just like a dagger stabbed through the top of a whale, and then underneath it says Piper Parabo on like a little scroll piece of paper.
It can't be a birth name, right? That was
no, it is.
That is her born name.
She is named after Piper Laurie.
Huh. There you go. So everything in this movie, right? The message that they're giving us over and over and over again is you are getting chewed up and spat out by the war machine, you know, it's not going to love you back. You should be with your family, you know, you shouldn't wait until
the only solution is to move to the West Virginian forest and landmine the entire like 4 or 5 acres around
live
your
in
shack.
A hole.
There should be landmines everywhere. It should be impossible to get in or out without being blown to pieces.
They're saying, hey, he should have been honest about the terrible physical toll all of this has taken on him and the medical assistance he needs and undoubtedly the lots of therapy that he requires, and that he should finally be honest about, you know, what he needs and how he needs to step away and be with his family and be the father he hasn't been while he's been doing all this stuff. And at the very end of the movie, the president goes, yeah, but have you considered not being a pussy and continuing to work for me, the president? He says, now, look, I get that you're all fucked up from all the trauma and all the physical punishment and all of these medical issues that you didn't disclose to me, but it's our struggles that define us and how we respond to them. And you should respond by just kind of pushing through, you know?
Well, what they don't, like,
backspace.
delete.
The only guilty president in the White House.
What they don't show us, this is only the director's cut, is a kind of Trumpian style insult where President Trumbull calls Mike President Pussy, and so that pretty much gets him.
Perhaps you'd like to work for the president
okay,
of Pussy Stan.
He says he's got a headache. He's got a headache. I say, okay, I like the guys who didn't have a headache. You know, maybe they're better protecting
they
the president.
They also suggest I couldn't tell whether there was a suggestion that he's supposed to develop a painkiller addiction as a result of his constant headaches, or whether that's just a kind of smear put around by Danny Houston. But it would make sense.
Yeah, well, I think it's just that he's just self-medicating for his issues because he refuses to do anything proper about them, right?
Yeah.
And like, Yeah, I just, again, like I said, extremely muddy as to what they're telling us about both what Mike Banning actually wants to happen, and then the message they keep giving you the whole time is like, if you just give away your whole life in service to this, you'll miss out on your own life, you'll miss out on your marriage, you'll miss out on your kids. And then at the end, he's like, nah, fuck that, sign me back up.
Yeah, fuck that. And they kind of dance around the idea of like, oh, you know, this like guy who's like, His dad had this sort of terrible traumatized breakdown as a result of his involvement in the military and abandoned him. And this is why he's got this kind of interesting sort of dad adjacent connection to the president. But we're not gonna go into that. No, we're not. Oh, he's just gonna make up with his dad and everything's gonna be fine. And then he's gonna be like, now I have two dads. This is great.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting because at the end, where they're just like, hey, hobo dad who's been living in the woods for ages making bombs and digging trenches, what if you just move into our nice clean house in Washington? And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
And I was kind of expecting him to like creep off or something at the end and I can't stand it here.
Oh, I don't like sitting on this chair. It feels weird.
Prefer sleeping on the ground. But instead he's like, nope, yep, I'm good. I'm gonna stick it out.
Well, we can tell that he has been totally, totally emotionally unaffected by his time in the rotting shack in the woods, and also by his time in the U.S. military, because he remembers the name of his wife. That is like that's what's kind of presented as like a kind of wellness check. So like the wife is like, you know what? I've never even heard that I have a father-in-law, let alone fucking Mountain Bill over here, and.
Yeah.
I'm not that happy about.
Well, isn't the point of that that he's proving that he is her father-in-law? Yeah, because he knows all of this, but it is
a kind of like, well, all right, if you really are completely sane and completely safe to be around me and my baby, then maybe you could stand on one leg and recite the alphabet for me. Maybe that's something that you could do. Okay.
Say the code word.
Yeah.
Like a sort of Sesame Street flamingo.
Yes. Exactly, like a Sesame Street flamingo. Yeah. It's quite confusing and it's quite long and it's quite boring. That's my take on
it. That's the achievement of this film, is managing to be confusing and confused about both its plot and characters despite almost nothing happening with any of those things.
Yeah.
And that's the motto of G-Base Productions.
Nothing happens, but you'll still be baffled.
Yeah. Long, confusing, baffling, and yet surprisingly devoid of content.
Oh, it's like I said, the real drop off in quality for the series. You know?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, I'm looking forward to Night Has Fallen, directed by the same director, Rick Roman Waugh, a man who is a former stuntman, and I think is really bringing that approach.
It's really bringing to the movies decades of concussion energy that you want from your action films.
Yeah, decades of concussion and focusing on nothing beyond there being stuff blowing up and people being stabbed.
I wonder if maybe this is like a bit of a fallout from like the success of the John Wick movies, because they're movies where, like, I think a guy who had been a long time stunt coordinator and stuntman for, Chad Stahelski? First achieved prominence as a stunt performer and coordinator, notably as key stunt double for Keanu Reeves on The Matrix. So he'd been working with Keanu Reeves since 1999. They were like, what if we do this extremely stunt-heavy, stunt-forward movie? Let's get this guy to direct a movie. Very, very successful. I wonder if with this one they were like, what if we got a stuntman to be the director of our movie?
Yeah. I think they should do that with anyone who works on a film. I think they should let the guy who did like the catering for a bunch of movies direct a movie. Everyone in the movie is just constantly at a buffet. Like it's the next in the Has Fallen series, and Gerard Butler is just like, he's just taking little vol-au-vents off of a tray.
Yeah, sandwich has fallen, yeah.
And he's like, I'm gonna kill you right after I finish this mini toad in the hole. You're gonna regret what you said about the president when I'm done with this little quiche.
He's doing the Steven Seagal school of sitting down through his whole performance. Yeah.
You're gonna have a few problems when I'm done with this mini eating mess. I'm gonna make an eating mess out of you. I've not really got a Seagal in the locker.
No, well, that's okay. I think you've done pretty well with the voices.
I'm going to invite you to a little party with my fist. Yeah. It's sort of weird. Steven Seagal talks like he's squinting. That's the only way I can explain it.
Yeah,
and he is squinting. Hey.
You kind of got to squint while you try and talk like him, right?
Yeah.
How about I put my foot in your ass?
Yeah.
It's like with Trump, you have to like grimace like you're doing a difficult shit.
Yeah, and like with the Knightley, you have to shove your jaw forward.
Yes. Yeah, it's like, yeah, you have to do the jaw wide shut face for Knightley.
They're all of me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ventriloquism. She looks like she's doing ventriloquism on herself.
Yes.
Puppeting her own face.
Yeah. Like she's trying to talk without moving her lips.
Yeah, exactly.
But no one's bent it like Beckham. Not since Beckham.
It's not even possible to bend it like Beckham.
It shouldn't be done.
Right. How many crushing migraines out of five are we giving this Angel Has Fallen? Beginning with Andrew.
I'm gonna give it 2 out of 5 because I've seen movies that were technically worse. You know?
Okay.
I do
want to
see
judgment.
Mm-hmm. I want to see Mike Banning get his oomph back in the next one, you know? Yeah. If you're not going to get him back, like, really, really, like, he killed people in this one, but I didn't feel like he was murdering them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I want to see Mike doing some murdering.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was too judicial.
In the first couple, it was like, yes, he was killing people, but you really felt like he was kind of enjoying it in a way that he wasn't supposed to as part of the job.
Mm.
A lot of wisecracks. We got barely any wisecracks after this. I just didn't feel the joy of eviscerating other men that I got from him in the other films. You know,
yeah, in the first movie, he was really killing people in a way that, like, you know, a British or Australian veterans organization would later make some T-shirts about how it was fine.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's good actually.
Yeah.
I want to see Mike get his battle joy back.
You need the type of act of war that makes an Australian supporter say something like, "Oh, well, if you don't like it, maybe you should go over there and murder someone that way."
Yeah, that like, kind.
Nah,
of...
No, well, I'm not sure that's what.
That, yeah, that kind of thing.
Oh, you got to try a little bit of breaking the Geneva Convention, mate. It's fucking cracker.
Yeah, and I suppose you're perfect, are you?
Yeah.
Etc.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe you should try dealing with the Taliban, you fucking drongo. You fucking rat dog cunt. See how you like. Yeah.
The important thing is that Australia never investigates its war crimes.
Yeah.
You know? Every now and then we see some footage of them and we say, hey, that's not on. And then that's kind of the end of the conversation.
Yeah. I think there should be like an Australian Poirot to investigate those. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cracky. Please do not go into Australian Poirot. We can preserve that as a bit for another time, I think.
But you see, Captain Hastings, it cannot have been the dingo. The paws were devoid of dust. Yeah, Phoebe.
I concur with Andrew. 2 out of 5 because there are technically worse films that exist.
Yeah. Yeah, I think
and we got to see Mike Banning again.
We did. I mean, there are technically worse films, but I think it would be pretty hard pressed to make a less enjoyable film.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Mm.
No, actually, it's no. Certainly I've not seen in the much so bad, less it's enjoyable good films. Yeah, I've watched Richard Linklater's Boyhood. Mm. Yeah.
Maybe we should have done that as a companion piece.
I honestly, we cannot do Boyhood for Movie Quarter because I hate it so much.
I know you do. You bring it up all the time.
I know. I couldn't even bring myself to rewatch it in a pejorative way.
Fair play.
That's my... So yeah, I think I have to give it 2 out of 5 as well. Andrew, is there anything you'd like to plug to the loyal listeners of this show? The Hogs.
If you, loyal listener of this show, are in Brisbane in the month of June, you they can see be. Punta Vista live. I'm going to have to go there for it, so you should as well, you know?
Hey.
See Punta Vista live on June the 15th? Does that sound right to anyone?
Yeah.
Tickets on sale at buntavista.com/live. Maybe the details will be there.
Potentially.
Yeah. And if you're not in Brisbane, you should listen to Punta Vista anyway, because it's a fun show.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
I can't stop you. According to our schedule, that this will be out past June.
Well, you know.
But
check in and we'll let you know how it went.
If you've missed it, then more fool you.
Yeah.
It's literally the only thing I've had to plug in so long because it's always just listen to the podcast I'm always doing.
I'm really excited about this Punta Vista live show because I feel as though I've seen it cut from whole cloth when I was hanging out with Theo and Ben in Brisbane and we were talking about live shows and they were like, we should really do more live shows. And I was like, yeah, I mean, Brisbane seems like the obvious place to start. There's at least 2 of you in Brisbane.
That's right.
And then a couple of weeks later, the Punta Vista live show in Brisbane was announced. And I'm like, I'm pleased to.
Oh, Ben's always trying to get us to do a live show. Ben's like, we should do a tour. And we're all like, yeah, I guess. We waited too long and now there's like 6 children across the whole podcast, you know? So So it's a lot to coordinate. But no, we'll go to Brisbane to make it easier. Only 2 plane tickets being purchased to make this show happen.
That's right.
But also if it has happened after this.
Then it went great.
Then don't worry about it. Hey, maybe we'll record it and put it on the feed and you can listen to it there, you know? If it's good. If it's bad and nobody liked it, you won't be hearing it.
The audience hated it.
Yeah, that's the Punta Vista promise.
Yeah, giving it 2 out of 5 because there are technically worse podcasts.
That's right.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this, thank you very much for being a $5 or more Patreon subscriber. You're the best. You're the backbone of this show. There is also a $10 tier where we have the What's the Deal miniseries. I don't know what this month's What's the Deal. Is it the one with November and Devon, maybe? There is one.
It depends. If this is June, then yes. If this is July, then there is no What's the Deal this month.
Yeah. But if it is July, then fear not, because What's the Deal not. Will fearlessly return in August.
Yes.
Due to maternity leave based shenanigans,
trying to bank episodes and trying to kind of guess.
Yeah, yeah, but
guess what's
going on. That is none of your affair, listener. The point is, What's the Deal? We'll be back in August.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We'll see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.